Rothko Chapel and a full calendar of upcoming events and workshops, visit rothkochapel.org or call 713-524-9839. This is KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I am Mike Koenig, and Bob Gartner is on controls, which I always appreciate. And we're going to do an open forum, but I'm going to start with something that I just heard about when I came into the studio today. I'm going to let the creators introduce themselves briefly and tell you this is like one of those brilliant ideas that are so obvious and so timely that nobody has thought of it until now. So we're going to be announcing essentially a world premiere, not only of a play, but of a concept for a play that is, in the literal sense of the word, unique. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves and tell the audience what it is that got me just so flipped out when I came into the studio.
Hello, and my name is Mel Peterson, and I'm the director of Space Junk, Do People Dream of Electric Children, a live performance play utilizing drone technology in the new form of puppeteering.
So, a drone play.
Yes.
With voice talents.
With voice talents, and this is one of them right here next to
me. But we're not you're not going to be doing, like, we've seen these creepy things where you have the face on the tablet. That's not the deal.
No.
They're color-coded.
They are color-coded, yes.
So it's a little like dark matter. Instead of numbering your characters, you're coloring them.
Well, they do have designations, but yes, they are colored. They have particular color decals on their drones, which are reflective of their stations.
I'm just smiling and shaking my head as I'm listening to this. This just sounds so, so cool. So, Kuma.
Yes.
Tell me your role in this.
So, I'm one of the writers, and I'm also one of the voice actors, and doing work with set design and various different things as well.
How did you guys come up with this? I mean, I just want to be clear. This is a play that human beings will be voicing, but the blocking, as they say, and all of the movement and whatnot and whatever is going on within the set, drones flying around the stage acting. So tell me how this evolved.
Well, it kind of originated with Mel's fascination with drones and new technology. And honestly, for us, it started as an inside joke where I am a collector of puppets. I have a lot of puppets. And I made some comment about possibly using one of the drones to control a marionette. And from there, it evolved
into... The drone became the marionette.
Right. It evolved to, well, let's put a wig on a drone and have it be the actor. And from there, like, it was funny and it was silly, but at the same time, we were like, well, why not? You know, it's kind of a facepalm, really. Like, why not? Someone is controlling them with a remote control. We have voice actors off to the side choreographing it. You know, it is very, very much like a dance. So it's been a very interesting year of creation.
You probably don't want to turn any powerful fans on during the show.
They are in themselves a powerful fan.
But they can drift.
They do. They do, yes.
I mean, it's not like an actor who takes a step. It kind of just, it flows like an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
So an airplane, it doesn't like have a stopping point. It has
it
a movement.
It almost creates its own cyclone on the floor. And that's why you have to be very careful in terms of blocking and whatnot. And you also kind of have to just go with what the personality is demanding. You have to let them create their character, like any talent.
Yes, you have to let the drone get into the role.
I would never assume to take an actor's place.
Are these drones, are they method?
Some of them are, yes. There's one particular drone that's very method.
Really? So it never gets out of character?
It has started taking on the traits of its character off, you know, during rehearsals, during off time.
All right. We are sort of doing an open forum. I mean, you know, I spent like 3 hours putting together a show with like, oh, my God, all the terrible news that's going on. And then I came into the studio and I hear about the drone show and I'm going, I got to do that. Even if it ends up taking over the show, it may or it may not. I got to do the drone show. We do have open forum, and we do take call-ins right now, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. You can, because it's open forum, you can ask about anything, but you can also ask about the drone show, and if you guys are interested, they'll hang around. So tell us, before we get past it, tell us where it is, when it is, how much tickets are, if there's a website people can go to. Give us the lowdown.
Well, you can find out the ticket prices and where it's at through our Facebook event page. It's Space Junk, Do People Dream of Electric Children. There's a group page and an event page. I would recommend going to the event page.
Okay, hold on a second. I'm going to write this down.
Absolutely.
All right, tell me again.
Our Facebook page is called Space Junk, Do People Dream of Electric Children.
Space Junk, colon.
Yes.
Because you couldn't make it simple.
I couldn't, and there's a question mark on the end.
Okay, and
do people dream
of electric children?
Of electric children.
People got that reference?
Yes.
As you can tell, we're giant
nerds. Was it Dick?
Yes.
Was it Gordon?
Philip K. Dick.
Philip K. He's had a lot of his stuff made into things.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Blade Runner was inspired by Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Yes.
See, I do know my science fiction to some... My old science fiction, I know. My new science fiction, I'm still catching up. Okay, we have a couple of callers. Let's see if they want to talk about, like, the unarmed black guy being shot or Trump trying to play the refs on the debates or the bombing in the Metro New York area. You know, I mean, there's plenty to talk about, including the drone show.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take our first caller, Jerry. Jerry, you're on the air. Drone show or something else?
Something else.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
You knew I was going to go with something else.
Yeah, I figured. But I mean, drone show. Go ahead.
No, it is an original concept. I have to give them credit for, you know.
I was so excited
for originality, if nothing else.
I literally walked into the studio, and I got here at like 8:45, and I hear about the drone show, and it's like, okay, I'm prepared to throw out whatever it takes on my show to get something on, some PR on the drone show. Okay, yeah. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, I was just going to say, in relation to something that I talked about actually about 3 weeks ago now, I started talking about how Trump was going to start issuing a bunch of executive orders and stuff like that. And today on NPR, they interviewed Evan Osnos, who's written an article for The New Yorker. It just showed up in The New Yorker about that and everything. And sure
I'm
enough,
sorry,
on
about
the first
what?
Day or two, they're looking at like 25, up to like 25
the executive orders. Do you want to give us any lowlights?
Yeah, they want to get out of, they're discussing actually getting out of the Paris Accords on the climate, Paris Climate Accords. They're actually talking about leaving, and this is one that'll upset you and me both, the Iranian, there's some halfway serious discussion about leaving the Iran deal.
Because a world war with Iran is so much better as an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, that's what people don't realize is that, you know, basically, like you and I've discussed before, that's like, you know, that's almost like, you know, it's only like, you know, that's only one, two, or three steps max down the road from doing that.
Well, you know, if we break the Iran treaty and we're serious about not letting them get nukes, well, by the way, we're letting North Korea get nukes, but that's a side issue. So if we're serious about that, there's sort of, I guess, a subconscious notion in people's minds that we can attack Iran, and they'll go, okay, we surrender.
No.
And it ain't going to be like that.
No.
And you'll end up with an alignment of countries. You'll have conventional war. You'll have terrorist war. You'll have, I don't know how the countries are going to line up in the Middle East. Certainly Russia would be on the other side of this.
And yeah, you would think.
Would be looking at a world war. This is what would happen.
Arguably.
And it would be the messiest war we have ever been in, because for the first time in our history, we're really, really vulnerable technologically and physically. I mean, it's insane.
I don't think we're quite as vulnerable as you think, but we are. There's a lot of risk with a war like that. There's a lot of risk of escalation. And the thing about it is you do that over that issue, you know, the other people who are aligned on the other side, a lot of them are nuclear powers, you know, Russia, among other things. And
Russia,
thing they want to get rid of,
and
is
Putin,
one thing you want him to do is to get, is to really, like, really ramp up, you know, basically forced expulsions out of the country.
And Putin has talked about being willing to be first user of tactical nukes.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, we have very, very different, what's the term, rules of engagement in terms of what our escalation thresholds are. But, you know,
yeah,
our escalation thresholds will to some extent be controlled by their escalation thresholds. And there's an old saying that no battle plan survives contact with the enemy.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah, that's just it. We're running a risk, and we don't know, like you said, basically we don't know who we would ultimately wind up fighting against, potentially. And
how many of our allies might sit it out? Because essentially, if we attack Iran, it would be, as an analogy, we would be Japan attacking Pearl Harbor. They would be Hawaii. That's kind of not a great place.
Close, yeah. Well,
I mean, that's not
yeah,
a great place to
be
in history.
In that situation,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know,
and,
John F. Kennedy once said that everybody knows the United States will not start a war. And that hasn't been true for about 30 years.
Yeah.
And that's sad.
Well, it is sad. But the thing about it is, though, is that they're actually talking about, they were talking about that. There was a little hinting at actually really changing up, doing an executive order that really does, like, put the screws on women's right to choose, basically. That would make, like, getting an abortion somehow or another through an executive order, how that would work, I don't know. But, and they weren't too clear on the details, but one of the things that they said was that they wanted to, like, really put a crimp in that. And there was just a whole bunch of different things. And like I said, I talked about that 3 weeks ago. I said it was going to be, you know, one of the things that I said is going to be Executive Order City right off the bat.
Yeah. Let me, you know, actually, you've given me kind of a segue into something that I thought about mentioning. I've been talking for weeks about, you know, the presidential election, the general election, which is not just for president. It's there's also, I don't think there's senators up for election here in Texas, but every representative in the state of Texas is up for election. You've got local offices, and that is November 8th, and you must be registered by October 8th, which is now just a couple of weeks away. So
yeah,
you can go to either votetexas.gov, vote Texas is one word, or you can go to harrisvotes.com if you're in Harris County. You can see if you're registered. You can see if your registration is correct. I don't know if they've put the ballots up yet. The last time I checked a couple of weeks ago, the ballots weren't up. But you can see what your ballot is for your precinct, who's running
yeah.
in your precinct. And here's the thing that I want to add to that I haven't been saying. You might remember that I think it was either in 2008 or 2012, Sarah Silverman put up a big thing about what she called the Great Schlep, where the adult kids would go to the retired parents in, like, Florida and tell them, you have to go and vote, and you have to vote for Obama. And I think now we have to do the reverse, because apparently we're now looking at polls telling us that the like 18 to 24s or thereabouts are thinking of either not voting or voting third party as a protest vote, which of course could swing the election because that, the Electoral College doesn't go by plurality.
Yeah.
So what I am calling for, I am now calling, and you can attribute this to me, what I'm calling the great nag, okay, where parents should talk to their under 30 kids, and especially their under 25 kids, and nag them not only to go out and vote, but to remind them how the Electoral College works, and it doesn't matter if there is a plurality, and anything under 270 votes, it goes into the Republican House and Senate. And we know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So it's critically important that, and I'm not going to endorse anybody on the radio station, but it's critically important that your candidate, whatever their popular vote tally, gets at least 270 votes so it doesn't go into the Congress, or
yeah,
it will be a constitutional crisis.
It won't be a constitutional
I will
crisis,
also,
but
I will also point out that this election brings up the reason that there is an Electoral College. The
yeah.
Electoral College was put there by the founders, whom the right wing worship, okay? It was put there by the founders as a firewall. Now, typically, the electors vote the way the state goes, or however, you know, it's apportioned by the states. But it is there as a firewall in case the popular vote goes wonky. There
yeah.
is nothing in the Constitution that says the electors must vote with the popular vote. As a
That's
firewall,
right.
they could all be what are called faithless electors and just do what's right for the country. Now, that would provoke a constitutional crisis. But that is why we have the Electoral College, because the founders wanted it there as a firewall against making a stupid populist decision that they felt could wreck the country.
Well,
hey, Mike,
I was going to
yeah.
say...
Hold on a second.
I don't think
question.
Hold on. Bob has a question.
When you brought your guests in this evening,
yes.
you called them the creators?
Yes.
Did you know there's a drone hovering over your head right now?
You're not serious.
Can you explain why you called them the creators, please?
Why is there a drone? There's no drone. Busting my chops. All right, we're gonna. Okay, there's a faux drone, a play.
A very anyway. Naturalistic one.
Yeah. Anyway. So Jerry, I think we're gonna wrap up your call.
Okay.
Do you have anything you
want?
Well,
I was just gonna say, actually, you said what I was gonna say, and that is, in essence, if you do vote for that third party candidate, what you're likely to see in point of fact is either, which you may very well see is not a President Trump, if it gets to that point. What you may very well see is something like a President Paul Ryan or a President Mitt Romney.
If it goes into the Congress, all bets are off.
Even Jeb Bush, through
you know
some kind of miracle, could still get in there.
When it goes into the Congress, it is not beyond the realm of belief, improbable as it is, that Donald Trump's daughter could be elected.
Oh, yeah, any adult.
I mean, it could be anybody. It could be Paul
yeah.
Ryan's mom or dad if they're alive. I mean, we're talking anything can happen. It doesn't have to
yeah.
be anybody who is actually on the ballot. So when people are thinking voting for a third party, remember how the system ultimately works. Someone must get 270 electoral votes or it goes into the Republican Congress. Just
so anyway,
think about it.
I told you first 3 weeks ago, but just remember Evan Osnos, the New Yorker, and the current New Yorker, and it, there was a thing about it on NPR if you want to go listen to it instead of reading the article. But anyway, that's it. I'll go ahead and let you go.
Okay, appreciate it. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM. I've got Bob Gartner on controls. I've got the drone show people, which we can talk about here in the studio. I get the impression they'll hang around as long as it takes to get another phone call or a phone call. Just which theater is this in? Give us an address.
This is at 5102 Navigation Street. Actually, Navigation Boulevard.
Between what and what?
Between what and what?
Between Navigation and...
Oh, South Lockwood?
Okay, so that gives us a general vicinity. But mm-hmm. you would prefer that people go to the Facebook event page
yes.
and sign up. How much are tickets?
Tickets.
Haven't decided yet?
Are we allowed to say that?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, is this a nonprofit?
No, we're not allowed to say that.
Is this a nonprofit?
We're getting tickets.
I'm sorry?
So there is a door charge.
Is it a nonprofit?
It is not a nonprofit.
Okay, so you do have public grant money.
Yes.
Yes,
okay.
We do.
So
To put on the play.
Yeah. So, really, you're not allowed to say how much tickets are? Bob, can they say how much tickets are?
No, I think not on that one.
Oh, man.
But you can definitely find out by going to the event page.
If it's a KPFT or perhaps a Pacifica event, yes, I believe you could.
Okay.
I don't believe it's a KPFT
one. All right. But you can go to...
You could put an adjective there, whether it's nominal or some sort.
Is it nominal?
I'm not sure. What does
that... Okay, if you would have liked, you know the way they do restaurants, $1, $2, $3, or $4 signs, how many dollar signs would it be?
One to two dollars.
We
do have special pricing for students and seniors.
Okay, good deal. So you can go to Facebook and search for Space Junk. I imagine Space Junk is not going to turn up lots of pages.
It probably shouldn't.
So,
but you never know.
You never know. So Space Junk : Do people dream of electric children? And I guess they'll hang around in case anybody wants to talk about the drone show.
We're getting an education.
Oh, well, good. Thank you. We do have an open forum here, and there's lots of serious and semi-serious stuff in the news to talk about. 713-526-5738. I do also want to mention that KPFT always needs your support. The more support we get when we are not having fundraisers, the fewer fundraisers and the shorter they will be. So just saying, you can go to kpft.org, click on the tip jar, hopefully tell them Think Wing Radio sent you, kpft.org, and you can help support this station with as little or as much, you know, if it's a buck or the price of a coffee, or if you have $100 you fell into from the lottery and you want to do a tax-deductible contribution, that's fine. You can also follow me on Twitter at Think Wing Radio. You can go to my blog page, thinkwingradio.com, and... I guess that's all I can think of. Okay, so 713-526-5738, and next up is Scott. Scott, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. Okay, we cannot win the war if we think that the American government might be just as corrupt as the German or Japanese governments.
Sneak attacks are just not historically popular things.
Sneak attacks.
Well... You know, if I guess we could, you know, if it comes to that, I suppose the process would be delivering an ultimatum or not. I mean, the fact is nobody has declared war on anybody since 1945 when Russia declared war on Japan. And that's the last time anybody has declared war. And it's not like there haven't been any wars involving major and regional powers. So it's something that's gone out of fashion. So it's like, what level of sneak attack will it be?
Okay, but what I was really talking about was I've been rereading David Brock's books about the right-wing propaganda machine, and he says they think that politics is an extension of warfare by other means.
Well, of course. Yeah, that's what Clausewitz.
Yeah. Oh, I had an English professor talk about the day Roosevelt died. He said he pulled a gun on a comrade who said we couldn't win without Roosevelt. I guess my professor was military police back then.
Huh.
Yeah. That would have been in 1960 that he told me. And, of course, he was age to be fighting World War II.
I was watching, I don't remember what it was, I don't think it was a Nova, but they were talking about presidential health and how relevant it is to the process.
Okay.
Now, my particular feeling is everything that you want to know about a president or a potential president, their income, their tax returns, any potential corruption that they might or conflicts of interest they might have, their health, really all of that, what you need to know is in the primaries. When it gets to the point where everybody has been nominated, it's really too late. And I'll give you the perfect example. Roosevelt was diagnosed during the 1944 election. Roosevelt was diagnosed by his own doctor. His health was so poor. His blood pressure, they didn't have blood pressure medications that really worked. His blood pressure was so high, unbelievably high. The top number was over 200. that his doctor told him he probably would die in office and probably not long after he was inaugurated. And he died like 3 or 4 months after he was inaugurated. Now, here's the thing. If that had been known, and if you had looked at it as, do you want Harry Truman as president, or the Republican nominee who wanted to undo all of the New Deal stuff, you would have died. You probably would still have voted for the dying president.
Of course, I was. I didn't know about elections back then. I first heard about elections in 1948.
Well, I got old enough to think about elections in 1960.
Okay. Yeah. Well, somebody was telling me they thought that we could have gotten along much better with Stalin if Roosevelt had lived instead of having Truman.
Well, I think
I am very skeptical of that. I think Stalin would have been Stalin.
Yeah, Stalin would have been Stalin, and Roosevelt would have been sick and weak. Truman was a healthy, youngish man. And, you know, I think at the time, he was considered to have been a terrible president. And when you started to get 20, 30 years down the road, when you can kind of see how things sort out, he's now considered one of our great or near great presidents for the way he handled the Second World War, the surrenders of Germany and Japan, the fact that he did not nuke North Korea or China. He dismissed
MacArthur.
Because he was making noises about, you know what, we should go past the Yalu River into China, we should nuke them, we're the only nuclear... And so, I mean, for what he did, as well as for what he did not do under provocation, he is probably one of our near great or great presidents.
Oh, I grew up hearing Truman was absolutely terrible.
Yep, I did too.
Eventually I came to respect him. But I grew up in a Republican household, it was suburban Houston, and Joe McCarthy was a hero for some time, although my parents got disenchanted with him. Practically everybody I knew was Republican, and I never heard of not voting.
Where'd you grow up?
It was assumed when I turned 21, I would be voting.
Where did you grow up?
Just west of Bel Air.
Really?
Yeah.
Texas,
the Houston area.
The southwestern states generally, the southern states generally, are not considered to have a strong voting culture. The Northeast and the West Coast tend to have stronger, especially Southern California, tend to have strong voting cultures. And the way that translates is when you have like a 55% turnout, which is kind of typical of a presidential era election, that's because like 80% of the people in New York City turn out, and like 50 or 35% of the people in Texas turn out. If everybody eligible to vote voted, this would be a progressive country.
Yeah, but my parents grew up in Oklahoma, so we were not, probably not typical of Texans.
Maybe so.
Yeah, and I had a grandfather from Rhode Island, and
that's where it comes from.
Yeah, I probably identify more with New England than other parts of the country, if anything.
Isn't it interesting how regional cultures can make such a huge difference?
I'm in a line that goes back 11 generations in Rhode Island.
You're a real Yankee.
Yeah.
Well, you're ethnically a real Yankee.
Yeah, I think so. I'm more Yankee than most of the rest.
Texan by birth, Yankee by ethnicity.
I was always on the forefront in the family on civil rights.
So ahead of your time for this region.
Yeah, I lived 15 years in a predominantly black neighborhood.
You know, when I was growing up in Brooklyn, I was in southeast Brooklyn, an area called Canarsie.
Yeah.
And Canarsie, in some ways, was a mixed neighborhood, but I think until I was about 10 years old, I really, honest to gosh, thought that there were only four ethnic groups in the world.
Okay.
There were whites, Italians, blacks, and Puerto Ricans.
Yeah.
That's when I grew up, until I started becoming aware, which was about, you know, the time of the Nixon-Kennedy elections, until I became a little bit more aware of the wider world and started asking questions. That's, you know, when I would watch Lassie and everybody was going to church, and I remember asking once, why don't they ever go to synagogue? Why is everybody always going to church? Because, like, my neighborhood was one quarter Jewish.
Oh, I think New York City is an interesting place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
You know, I have said since 1996, I came from New York in 77.
Yeah.
And I had some experiences, which I don't have to go into on the show, but I can if anybody asks. Yeah. Since 1996, I've had three things to say about New York. Everybody's in a constant state of stressed out and pissed off.
Yeah.
When you go into a store, it's like they took customer service lessons in Moscow and attitude lessons in Paris.
Yeah.
And that New York City is a great place to be from.
Okay.
Which is essentially a long way of saying what you did.
Was cars were bumper to bumper. There was a delivery truck swinging around a corner, and guy standing there, and he comes up to the driver and says, "Hey, buddy, what's the matter with you?" And because this delivery truck had to
stop. This is New York, man. I mean, people triple park. You got to fight to survive.
Yes, but I did enjoy the Museum of Modern Art and Chinatown.
You want to know something? Brooklyn, which until about, what was it, 1887-ish, when they created the city of Greater New York, which is technically the name of the city, Brooklyn, as a city on its own, still has some of the finest museums and public spaces in the country, if not the world. Prospect Park is enormous, second only to Central Park. The Botanical Gardens are a must-see. It's got the Brooklyn Museum has some of the finest Egyptian samples in the world. I mean, they've got mummies. They've got artwork. It's you know, I it's been so long since I left my neighborhood. It's changed so much. What I found is going back is almost sad because there's just nothing there I can identify with. But it finally occurred to me, you know what? There's so much more of even just Brooklyn that I can enjoy. The Grand Army Plaza Library, which is a great library. All those other museums. All of this in that small area. It's wonderful.
Yeah. My impression of Brooklyn was grubby.
Well, there are those parts.
Yeah, but I didn't
really know that Brooklyn is now the... You know, Brooklyn...
And, you know, I was getting into elevator in the Empire State Building, and elevator was very full, and the operator said, "Would you like to come in? Would you like to dance?"
Would you like to dance?
Dance, yeah. Oh, and there was also...
You sure he wasn't like Jack Nicholson dressed up like the Joker?
Well, there was another instance. I was
you
want to
dance like the devil in the deep blue sea?
In front of Rockefeller Center, and this guy was coming toward me, and we couldn't decide which way to pass. And he said, "Hey, buddy, I thought you was trying to put the make on me."
You know what? You actually bring up an excellent...
I think they... This is 1970.
Yeah, let me just hold on, Scott.
Live up their reputation as a gay haven.
Scott, let me break in for a moment.
Okay.
Because of that story you told about the guy approaching you on the street, are you on a speakerphone, by the way?
No.
Okay. It sounded like maybe it's half duplex. One of the reasons, probably the main reason, why in cities like New York and others, that they say people are so rude, they don't even make eye contact with you. They look away. They ignore you. It's like you're not even there. The reason for that is there's a very primal instinct in mentally disturbed people of a certain type that if you make eye contact with them, it's like making eye contact with a predator. All of a sudden, they know you're real to them, and that sometimes will provoke an incident. So by avoiding eye contact with people, you're actually raising your survival chances. It's a survival tactic. And people in the Northeast don't think of it that way because they're brought up that way. But like here, you know, I'll nod to people as they pass, and it's sort of a normal thing. If you ignore them, they think you're rude. In New York, it's de rigueur. It's like how you survive is not making eye contact. I could tell you experiences on subways when I was going to and from work that, you know, that you wouldn't believe. One guy actually, he ended up at the end of the story trying to pull the gun out of the holster of a transit cop, and I saw him led away in cuffs. He had been standing right next to me trying to engage me, punched me in the arm at one point to get my attention.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, there are 8 million stories in the Naked City.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, I think I'm going to let
you
go. Do you have any last words before I let you go? Anything you want to wrap up?
I'm going to be voting October 24th.
Good man.
And I turn 75 tomorrow.
Well, mazel tov. Do you have any kids to nag?
No children.
Happy birthday, Scott.
Yeah, happy birthday.
I think I told you I was extremely gay.
I don't know that it came up, but yep. Good for you.
Yeah. I do not even have a male.
If you have any young people that you're close to that you can nag to make sure they vote, do your duty.
Yeah. Well, I talk to people on Facebook. I don't really have contact. I don't have contact with really young people.
I need to. You see, I'm not good at like producing videos for YouTube. I've never done that. We need to do a video of the great nag.
Uh huh.
That's what we need to do. Just and then upload. Maybe you guys with the drone show.
That's what we do.
This is true.
Excellent. Okay, thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you.
You've inspired a concept. Take care. All right, we have open lines, and it is open forum, 713-526-5738. Bob, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah. I think we need to review what your guests are all about.
Yes.
And give their critical information. And I was looking up the word space junk, and obviously since I'm in here managing things, I don't always have my ear to the show. And I don't know quite how that fit with Navigation Street is the venue, the address, the phone number, or whatever.
Okay.
So I was going to try to help y'all out on that word, but nothing comes up with just the use of the word.
On
all kinds of NASA information. And
Facebook.
Stuff.
You have to go to Facebook. So, and then search on Facebook for Facebook. Space junk.
And that is, what does that word represent? The name of the play?
No, it's the name of their sort of group.
The group?
Well, it's the name of the... Oh,
it is the name of the play.
Oh, it is the name of the play.
Yeah.
Yes,
and actually corrected. Where that name came from, especially Stephanie St. Sanchez, while we were writing the script, she came up with that part of the title. We had already had the part where it's "Do people dream of electric children," which is forming the basis of the concept. But
the
then
Philip
she added
K. Dick inspiration.
And then she added space junk, and I said that was perfect because it is space junk, is bits of junk left out in space.
Let me do a quick station ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. I am Mike Koenig. Bob Gartner is on controls. I've got my space junk guests here, the drone show people. We're going to talk a little bit more about that, unless we get phone calls that want to talk about something else or space junk. We do have open line, 713-526-5738. Open forum plus space junk. Anything that you've seen in the news you want to talk about, there's, God knows, plenty of it. You can help support KPFT by going to kpft.org, clicking on the tip jar, tell them Think Wing Radio sent you. As much or as little as you can afford is greatly appreciated. You can follow me on Twitter at Think Wing Radio, or you can go to my blog at thinkwingradio.com. So, 713-526-5738. Now let's talk about space junk again. So, if you want to find it, and
those dates, the phone number, whatever.
Well, do me a favor, Bob. See if you can go to Facebook and then search space junk and see if it turns up. Appreciate it. Okay, so you're doing a show where the actors are drones. It's almost like Futurama. You can imagine like Bender doing a show like this on Futurama, where it's all like what is it? They actually had a show where they talked about a soap opera that was done entirely by robots, and it was something like, I don't know, Days of Our Oil or something.
It was All My Circuits.
All My Circuits. That was it. All My Circuits. So
our nerd
is
showing.
No,
all of us love it.
Mine too. I go to science fiction conventions. I just don't have the money to go to them far away.
I feel you.
Yeah. And I'm beyond sleeping in the hallway and crashing with 10 other people. I'm just too old for that stuff.
I mean, we try, but yes, sometimes you just like the comfort of your own bed.
As you get older, you like it more. ApolloCon, unfortunately, did not go on this year because there was another space convention that came in and basically took their weekend. And they, you know, the turnout is moderate enough. I think they usually get several hundred people to the ApolloCons. They've been doing them now for like 12 or 13 years. And I was hoping that ApolloCon and KPFT could do something together, and I actually got them interested, but then they put it off for a year, so maybe next year.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I always suggest to the theater, the theater we're premiering the drone play at,
The pilot, and ApolloCon is a 501c3 organization, so I can mention them.
Exactly. The theater we're doing the drone play at, the Pilot on Navigation, formerly Frenetic Theater, I'm working there every now and then, and I'm always suggesting to them, whenever you put on a steampunk production or whatnot.
Steampunk.
Steampunk production. It's very important.
And now that
you should go to Comic Palooza. You should go there. You should premiere it. You should play.
Okay, now that you've brought up the term,
yes,
you must explain to people that do not know. And I imagine a lot of KPFT people are probably into this sort of stuff, just thinking. But for those who are not, explain steampunk.
Well, steampunk, in the broadest sense of it, is combining more evolved modern technology with, like, say,
19th
century environments.
So it's like steam-powered computers.
Exactly, steam-powered computers. If you go on to a website online, something like DeviantArt, you'll see a lot of people who do artwork of different eras in history. That what if they had cell phones, or what if they had different forms of technology? I've seen a Darth Vader mask.
Some of this stuff is incredibly creative.
Oh my goodness, yes.
So if you guys want to look it up, it's steam, like in a steam engine, and punk, like in punk rock. That's mm-hmm. exactly what it is, steampunk.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff. And if you just do images, you'll just see a lot of the artwork right away. I mean, it's basically wild. What are they called? Wild Wild West?
Yes,
it's that kind of stuff. Where they take modern technology, what would they do with it if all they had was a steam engine?
Mm-hmm.
It's really fascinating, and some of it is remarkably creative and even beautiful. So, is there a plot to your drone show?
Yes, there is.
Do you want to give us the synopsis?
Let me give you the official synopsis that we have shown to several people.
And this is a world premiere. This is a literally, in the literal sense of the word, a unique production. The mm-hmm. world's first play mm-hmm. performed by drones.
Yes. Performed by drones.
Brilliant in its simplicity.
They are the actors. There is no other human actors on stage. There are voice actors, but there are no
controllers,
other...
Yes. But the... And wigs?
No. That was,
but
that
that's
was part
brilliant.
Of the original concept.
I will say, you may see a mustache somewhere.
Yes, that is true. Utilizing modern technology to create new forms of puppeteering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you were telling me that the original concept that you were sort of batting around was using the drones to operate marionettes.
Yes.
And then that sort of evolved with, well, but the drones could be the marionettes.
Right.
It's a fascinating idea. And obviously, the play is only half the fun. The fun is watching non-human actors performing as human actors, performing a play that could be performed by human actors.
Mm-hmm.
It has many levels.
Yeah, it really, really does.
And there's a lot of, you know, it's interdisciplinary because we're doing puppeteering and we're doing video. Like, there's video and animation component that has come into this as well. There's the opening of the entire show is a video that we made with a more or less a life-size human astronaut puppet that we created and then did video with that, did green screen. There's a hallway chase in the mothership. And so there's animation that goes along with that. We have another person that's creating original music for this production. All the set pieces are original production. So, part of that, too, what's been really, really difficult for us, but I think also just amazing, even as someone who's working on this production, because we got a grant, the stipulations for the grant was to create the project in a one-year time frame. So 1 year to go from concept to writing a script, building a set, training drone operators, getting voice actors, practicing, rehearsing, doing all the choreography for movements, all of that had
to be done in
1 year with a limited budget.
So now tell me again, because we really haven't talked about it for half mm-hmm. an hour, tell me again your names. Tell me again the name of the show, the name of the theater, and the dates that it will be performed, and how to find out how to attend.
Well, my name is Mel Peterson, and I am the director of Space Junk, Do People Dream of Electric Children, a live performance play with camera drones as the actors, and that will be premiering on the 23rd, 24th, and 25th.
So next Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Next Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Oh, we're doing two weekends.
Actually, that's coming. This coming Friday, Saturday. Okay.
Exactly.
See, I'm getting
old. And next week also.
And next week also.
Okay.
We're doing two weekends, and that will be at the Pilot on Navigation Theater, or formerly Frenetic Theater. If you're searching out their website, you can find our play promoted there as well. And that will be on 5102 Navigation Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77011.
And Kuma?
Yes.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Kuma, and I'm one of the writers of the script. I'm one of the voice actors. I've done various different lots of things with this project.
Now, I want to point out, I'm sorry, Bob, you want to say something?
Let me just add a couple of embellishments to that. Yes, it is on Facebook. Their play and website on Facebook, Space Junk, Do People Dream of Electric Children? Just as Ms. Peterson said. And that's 7 o'clock Friday and Saturday, Sunday at 2. And it is a very nominal requested for attendance charge. So you can find that on Facebook. I typed in Space Junk and semicolon. It popped up. Do People Dream of Electric Children?
Appreciate that, Bob.
Thank you.
I want to mention, let me do a quick ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner on controls. KPFT.org is how you help support this station, keep this show and this station on the air. And for those of you, first, we do have open lines, and it is actually open forum, and there's all kinds of news that we could talk about as well. 713-526-5738. And, I mean, I don't normally do the show we're doing. You know, it's like I don't promote local theater. I don't promote local venues. I don't. It's just, and I've got 7 pages of preparation here. And it's just when I came into the studio and I started talking to these two folks, and it's like this was such a literally unique idea. It got me so excited. I just felt I wanted my listeners to know about it and have a chance to know about it and perhaps attend it, because it's got to be a world premiere, not only of the play, but of just the whole concept. You guys will be a footnote in history for the first drone show.
Well, certainly a flight in history.
Yeah. A flight note?
A flight note in history.
An ETA.
An ETA.
You will be an ETA in history.
There you go.
Okay, we're going to have a phone call in just a moment. Bob is taking it. I'm just going to mention some of the things that I actually had set up here. Terrence Crutcher, hands in the air, shot by a white police officer. Circumstances unclear, but the tape of the incident seems to be pretty much self-explanatory. There is no indication that this man was armed, either on his person or in his vehicle. They were talking about tasing him because his hands were in the air, but he was not following instructions. And one officer tased him, and the other officer, for some reason, shot him. There's, of course, the bombings in New York. They have apprehended a key suspect. There are several other people they're looking at. One of the things that I've been thinking about lately is how Bernie Sanders, instead of going out and campaigning openly for Hillary Clinton, somehow he just doesn't seem to be doing anything, and he's telling people to not vote for Trump. But that's a negative play. He's not saying who to vote for, so he's really being a grumpy old man. We've got Trump trying to game the debate moderators. We've got Putin and Syria, and there's actually kind of an interesting story there. So, I mean, there's a lot of non-drone show stuff to talk about. It's just we ended up talking about a drone show. But this is open forum, 713-526-5738. Kevin, you can be on the air in just an instant. We're waiting. There you go, Kevin. You're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
Hey. I think it's good. I think it'd be neat if we can, like, the guys could do, like, maybe get the old debates between Noam Chomsky and Buckley Jr. Jr. in the 60s. Remember the French Indonesia and have the drones and have, they can get like a number two pencil with a eraser going into the forehead like Buckley used to do with the rolling eyes and just have those French Indonesia debates. I would go to that.
Okay, Mel seems to understand what you're talking about. What is he saying?
I think I was getting close to that. You're suggesting we utilize drone puppets and talk about politics?
Yeah, I mean, like in, I know in the 60s, Noam Chomsky and
that could be, yeah.
They used to get into the French Indonesia debates, and just if you can just get the drone to lift up its arm and put a number two pencil and start rubbing it in its forehead and get some kind of rolling
there you
eyes.
Go. Get some eyebrows in there and do some expressions.
Yeah,
in a weird
look of all the idiot things that he was saying, that Chomsky would have his hands together going, what did he just say? And if you can get that.
Well,
I'll go to it. I mean, I might go to it anyway, but
I would watch it too.
Well, once you've got the concept, I mean, it's kind of like robot combat. Once you've got the concept, you can go all kinds of places with it. Once you've got the concept, right. And,
well,
I mean, once you've got the concept of a drone show, it's like, now, it's sort of doing it now experimentally for fun to sort of see what the potential is. But once you've got the potential, there are things you can do with drones that become socially and politically relevant as well as entertaining,
right?
Humorous and serious at the same time because of the nature of the performance. Like, once you've opened that door, which you guys now have done,
right, exactly.
All of a sudden, you can just brainstorm a million things. It's really a creative breakthrough of sorts.
Right.
I would put a patent on it, guys.
Well,
I don't know if you can or not, but you might want to consult somebody about
it. Well, we certainly plan to publish the script. And our hope is that it will go to schools and children will be able to, whether they have access to drones or not, they can create their own puppets and start getting in on ideas of how to do it.
Because you had a public grant, I don't know whether you can limit access, but I would absolutely go to a copyright lawyer and talk to them about how much of this concept you guys can copyright. You can't patent an idea, but copywriting the notion of the performance, if it is unique, I think that the rule used to be anyway, that it can be in the public domain for up to a year, and you can still copyright or patent something. So, I think that's a great idea.
The story,
Kevin.
Probably. Yeah,
absolutely
the
story. The concept you might need to explore, and you may or may not be able to copyright elements of it.
Well, we would love to be able to workshop it into a production that kids of all backgrounds, particularly girls, young girls, or anything, would like to come in and produce their own play.
You have broken open that door, and now all of a sudden the world is just open to all kinds of possibilities.
And there's a lot of intersectionality with this production with, like, women in the arts and women in STEM, like science, technology, engineering, and math. The play itself is a one-act sci-fi comedy, but there are a lot of kind of unspoken commentary on lots of various different sociopolitical issues. We talk about gender, we talk about sexuality.
Right.
Even though it's, I mean, it is a family-friendly show, we do touch on a lot of these different subjects, including drone use. You know, there's this weird duality of, like, current events, right? Like militaristic drones, and in this play,
and privacy invading drones.
Absolutely. In this play, like, there are no humans. Humans are gone. You know, kind of not necessarily
Skynet,
post apocalyptic kind of thing. But the drones are, you know, running drills to try and figure out how to protect the next crew. And in that, they become sentient. They take on personalities. They kind of more or less become the new humans. So there's multiple levels. Even within, you know, a sci-fi comedy, there's a lot going on in there.
I think you have a lot going on, other than just...
we have a lot going on.
And Kevin, I think that you have also contributed some conceptual seeds that may grow here now that you've brought up some of this. I don't know how much you guys had thought about this from the socio-political aspect. I think you were thinking of it more from the sci-fi technical novelty aspect.
We are giant nerds, so yes, we always consider entertainment... This is one of the reasons why we made it a science fiction sort of play.
And it's one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the show for 5 minutes. Maybe 10.
It's been a long 5 minutes.
Yeah. But fun.
Yes, definitely.
And I'm actually very pleased that I could drop my show, essentially, and introduce this creative, intellectually, brilliantly simple novelty that could become a thing.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I think, if nothing else, I would like to believe that the audience will come and be inspired to do their own thing. And if you would love to come to see the play, I would love to talk with you more about your idea, because I think, yes, there is a whole wide world of possibilities. And I think progress
and
in
mustaches and rolling
exactly.
eyes. I mean, you could go anywhere with
progress in humanity and progress in politics. I've always felt comes from an area of let's brainstorm together. Let's
exactly.
not speak for each other. Let's let each other speak together and find out where that where a good in between for all of us is. You know.
Yeah. Well, kudos to y'all's guys' effort and ideas, and I'm just coach. Alien Mike's ideas. I can hear his brain percolate.
Good.
Yes.
So, let it percolate.
I perk all the time.
Yeah.
My brain is the perkiest part of me.
He was talking about, are you in speakerphone, half duplex? You know, so that's Mike for you.
Yeah. You know what half duplex versus right. full duplex is, right?
I do security IT, so yeah, I got it.
Okay. I will explain it after you get off the line, because it's actually important for people to know when they're on speakerphones. All right.
Nice to let me talk to your guests, Mike and Bob. Y'all have a good one. Talk
all right. Later. Thank you so much,
you
Kevin.
Too.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Okay.
Get the show.
Thank you so much. Okay, we've got a minute. I'm going to explain half duplex versus full duplex. I used to sell cordless phones when I worked for Best Buy, so I had to learn stuff like this. Full duplex is what you normally think of with a wired phone, a landline phone, where you can talk, I can talk, and if we talk at the same time, we might not understand each other, but we can hear each other. Half duplex is what a lot, not all, but a lot, maybe most speakerphones do. When you go on speaker, when you're talking, essentially you're on transmit. And the person at the other end, if they say something, they cannot hear. You cannot hear them, and all that will happen is the signal will start to break up as the transmitter and receiver try to figure out what's going on. So it's very much in a way like an old-style radio where you have to say over and release your mic so that you can hear what the other side is saying, except that the phone is trying to do it automatically. So if you and plus now, because everything is like VOIP, voice over internet provider, one way or another, there's always a time delay. Whenever you're on the phone, there's always like a half second to 1 second time delay, so people don't even necessarily know you're interrupting them when you're interrupting them, because there's a delay and it's half duplex. Anyway, so this is the kind of varied random stuff that I know if anybody ever wants to ask. And the guy who talked about his air conditioner is a joke. If you go over 5 tons, you're into commercial, so you would want to zone anything over 5 tons. Okay, you've been listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. Bob Gartner has been on controls. I've had Mel Peterson and Kuma here talking about the drone show. Go to Facebook and look up Space Junk. This should be really, really interesting. My quote for the sign-off, when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross, sometimes attributed to Sinclair Lewis, but it's actually much more interesting than that. Take care. I'll speak to you next week. Bye-bye.
Alma Vizcarra, your KPFT local election supervisor. Ballots for local station board elections were sent out on August 15th. For those of you receiving a mail ballot, it should have come to you in a bright yellow envelope. If you accidentally damage or lose your ballot and would like a replacement ballot, or if you have not received a ballot yet and believe you are a current KPFT member, please email me at les-kpft2016@pacifica.org or call 832-930-2030. Pacifica delegate elections use the single transferable vote system, or STV, where members can rank the candidates in their order of preference, first choice, second choice, and so on. To learn more about STV, please visit elections.pacifica.org. Completed ballots must be received by September 30th. If you're interested in learning more about the candidates, please visit elections.pacifica.org. Thanks again for your support of KPFT.
KPFT invites you to Electro Love Fest, Saturday, September 24th from noon to 1 a.m. Performers include Tres X, Gravel Tooth, Nameless Horses, Heartburn, A Live One, and more. The event happens at the Last Concert Cafe, 1403 Nance Street, near downtown Houston. It's a benefit for your community radio station. Tickets and more details are at kpft.org. See you there. This is KPFT, Houston.